Ich sollte auf euch begrüßen vom Namen des ARC und des Dachverbands. And I will switch to English now because this event will we will speak in English. I would like to welcome very warmly Idan Ohr from Israel. We know each other from Imago. There at Imago, Idan is representing Israel, the Israeli DOPs. And there we got in contact with, or we've heard there the first time from this system. He, unless you did it, but part of it, you built up a very interesting model or system to influence or to increase the working conditions. And now we are all very curious what Idan will tell us this afternoon. Because maybe we can use some of these ideas to make our situation much better, or to make a big progress in this topic.
Okay, so my name is Idan, and a little bit about myself personally. I worked for about 15 years as first AC, and I worked few last years as a cinematographer, but in the last 2 years what I'm doing full-time job is just running the association in Israel. During the time that I worked in as a crew member, I worked voluntarily for the association as a board member, then I was responsible for finance, and then I was the chairman of the association for 2 years. So this all happened in 15 years, and today that's basically what I'm doing in my full-time job, just trying to improve the all the situation of film workers in Israel, trying to help in other places wherever I can, and improve the conditions. It's just it's working conditions, and it's also social rights and. In the coming future, also we just started on work on author rights for cinematographers. That cinematographers will have author rights, and that's generally what I want to show you today is two topics actually. It's one about our association, how do we work. And the other one is, in a title, we can call it Creator Voice, what we have in Israel, which is in, I will explain later what it is, but it's in two words, it's just a forum that we established a few years ago of seven different associations in Israel. And I will get into it later, tell you which association, how do we really work and what we're doing. So this is just I will start with this presentation, and then in the end I hope we'll have some discussion, because it's the most important thing to do is to discuss it. So there's some slides of just for my point of view that give some inspiration about way of thinking. So this is one of them. It's just a sentence from Mahatma Gandhi, which is I think it's really relevant for my kind of work, and I think for way of thinking. We'll move on. So ACT established in 1989 by five people, so it's very similar to what we're doing here, maybe. Active people that are decided that they had enough. And now we have 750 members in 11 different crafts, which include cinematographers, ACs, sound department, lighting, grip, makeup, wardrobe, script supervisor, ADs, and production assistants and managers, and location managers. It's one craft is called production, which is quite new, and it's really unusual and not very, you cannot see it very often that the production people are joining an association of film workers, because usually they are in the side of the producer, but we realize that they are working the same as we are do on the set, so we can help them to improve their conditions. So what they're doing, they're working according to our agreement right now. This, all the PAs and the production managers and all these people. The main issue about our association is the communication, inside communication between people. And we're doing it in three ways. It's just through emails. I'm usually visiting every set that's been shot in Israel. Dailies like that you're doing one day or something like that, but feature films, television series, drama, I'm visiting the set. The main issue, the main way of, you will understand later why it's the main things that communicate between people, it's the text messages. And what we're doing with text messages is we have a software in the computer that we can send with pressing one button text message to all the members to inform them about information we think that it's important them to know. For example, if we have a problem with production and we got a notice from one of our members about it, it's take not more than 15 seconds that all the other people will know about it. And what happened usually is that it will take another 15 minutes, the producer will be on the line to negotiate the situation and to try to solve it. So that's generally what the text messaging is really help us. This technology, the services our members are getting, it's a legal consultation by our advocate, master classes and workshops we're doing once in a while, every year, it depends on budget we have, collective bargaining with producers and broadcasters. It's divided to two. One is the working condition agreement we have, which you got one copy here. This is one with the producer guild, but we also have another agreement with broadcasters, and we have another agreement with the you see it later with the producer that produce advertising commercials for television,
which is public and private.
Public, no, public. They have. It is where public television have their own staff, employees that work for them full time, and it's like close broadcaster. It's not. That's something that we're dealing with. I'll talk later about the creator voice that we're dealing with. That the public television in Israel are not producing enough, and not so. And the social right, because all of our members are self employees. So there's a problem, the same as here, with social rights. So we are trying to help by building special insurance plans. So now we have for our members private health insurance. It's a plan we built from scratch. It's just it's a very cheap because we are many people. It's very cheap. It's a pension plan that we built. And we have insurance, special insurance for if we have any, by mistake, any accident or something like that. We expand it not only on work, also wherever in the world, in house, in the street, wherever it happened. And we have a third-party insurance, which cover every member up to $1 million for any damage that will cause because of him to a third party. On the set or wherever. This was this specific insurance. It's come with the membership fee, and we did it because a few years ago we have an art director that there was some accident on the set, that just the set fell and killed a bit that came to being shot. It just fell on him and he died. So. The insurance company sued the art director. So at that point we decided the people have to be covered somehow. Because the art director wasn't there. physically when it happened, but he's the one responsible for that. So and he paid some money and he did some he didn't go to jail, but he did some service for the community, some hours. It was in court and it was not that nice. The first collective agreement is what you see here, but it's not the same. It was signed in 1991, 2 years after we established the association. And at that time was the producer guild that include all producers, including advertisers, commercials, and everybody. Now they separate. And then 2008 we renewed this agreement. This is the paper you see here. We did in 2008. It's about the negotiation with the producer guild of 8 months. At the end we succeed to come out with an agreement. 2010 we signed an agreement with the commercial producers. I'll get back to it later on with a case study. I want to show you about how we are really implementing our way of work. But it was very, just generally, it was very, very hard to get this agreement because there were no guild for them. There was, each one of them was individual. It was very hard that even if you get an agreement with one producer, then how do you implement it all over? So, but we managed to solve it also. And this, that's what is very important, because as far as my knowledge, I know that there's many, many countries in Europe, there are great agreements, but they're not being implemented. So it's not worth the paper it's written on. So, but in Israel, it's all been implementing according to what you can read here. And if a producer wants to change any condition here, he's negotiated with me about it. And
so it's also like a model contract as well.
I will say one more word about this. Is the main thing that we that I decided to do a few years ago is to start to educate our people, to inform me on every production they got a phone call from producer, just to inform me that it's happened, even if they are not going to work there, or even if there's no any problem and they're working according to the agreement. I want to know about it. Usually I will communicate with the producer, negotiate with him to have an agreement about this specific production. And the next thing that I will do is that I will get from the producer the crew list, and I will send them a text message that the agreement of this production approved by the association, and they can sign on it. And I will email them the agreement, because I'm always recommend to our members to print the copy that I email them and to sign on it, because it's happened before. The producer had some agreement with me and then he tried the people we sign on a different one. So, but you know, it's a small, yeah, everything is possible. So, but it just happened to me 2 weeks ago that I have an agreement with the producer, and then I got a phone call from one of our members. He was a sound man that called and said, well, we agreed about 10 and a half hours per day and the agreement said 12 hours, so what's the story? So it's just but in this case it just takes like 5 minutes to have a phone call to the producer and it's all get back to according to the agreement. Legal perspective, we have the same problem as many other countries, and I understood it's the same in here, that according to the competition law, it is illegal for self-employees to organize or to bargain collectively. As you heard, until now, we are not really following the competition law in Israel, because the competition law is... We believe was built for big companies to have a free market, but for us as the people that work sort of in the bottom of the chain, we need we have to have some legislation of working condition. There's no other way, and also the producer and broadcasters in Israel understand that, because even the producer have to budget the production somehow. He needs some guidelines to know how much it's each one of the things cost, how much is a day of shoot, how much is overtime, how much is turnaround hour, all these working conditions that must be known before because they have to be in budget.
I think not only the producer has to know how he's going to make a budget, even the filmmaker, technician or somebody has to know how many hours am I going to work. Can I buy a ticket for Sunday for a theater, or do I have to sit home and wait till whether the producer will need me or not? I mean, we have to manage our lives as well, so we have a right to.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, in Israel, my experience, you can never know how many hours you're going to work. You can only know that you can get this amount of money for 11 hours, and if it go over it, you will have overtime, and you will know what the percentage of every hour will be. But some countries have, we don't have it yet, and I'm putting underline the word yet, the maximum day per hour. We don't have it yet, but. Okay, so it just it's as I said, it's not fair. It's not make any sense. It's just utilization of professionals and all this kind of. I'm talking about the competition law, and because in our point of view, self employees, it's just a way of taxing. That's it. It's nothing to do with working condition or bargaining or collectively bargaining. It's just organizational steps. We did as I started. It's a key issue. To communicate with the people on a daily basis. It's a key issue to have this this list of all the people that you can communicate with all of them at the same time. It's very crucial. You will see it soon with the case study. I want to tell you about things that we did, and also what is really really important is you have in each sector. If I don't know, in Israel it's a little bit divided. People that work for commercial for television, people work for feature film, people work. It's a little bit different people. It's like a closed market of people that used to do features, and so they sometimes mix. But you need in each one of these fields some to have people that can people can follow them. They don't have to be to have speeches or something like that. But it's just people that the rest of the guys can trust them and they can represent them. It's a new thing that I'm doing now in production. It's comes from the American system. It's just called a speaker. In every crew have his speaker that he's the one that that communicate between the producer and the crew. If any problem, if one of the crew member he going to this person, and he's the person that the producer know and the crew knows that he's the one that will negotiate with the producer on the set. All the issues, and it's worked very good because it's just a way to avoid all these blacklisting people that are become troublemakers because they're asking for what they deserve. So it's the main issue, the key issue to build. It's hard work, but it's possible. It's the solidarity and. It comes all together with the communication with people because this, what we're doing with the text messages is just get people that to know that everybody knows about everything. So if there's a problem with the production, and one of our members will decide to take the job, although there is a problem, all the rest of his colleagues will know that he did it, and then it puts some pressure on people and. By now, the last few years, it's worked perfectly. It's just what happened usually is when the text message like this is going out, it's very, very quickly that the producer, it's on the line and just, okay, let's solve it. Let's see what we can do. When I wrote here clear challenges and targets, people in our association and generally don't like or cannot do a lot to build this solidarity. They just have to be asked to do very small things or simple things that's not going to hurt them personally. That's the main problem, because people are afraid all the time that they will be marked. So we are trying to ask our people very small things that they have to do, like, for example, to inform us about the production, which is not a problem, because for me they can call anonymously and just say, well, this is the production, this is the line producer, this is the dates, that's it, bye. I don't care who informed me. And then, of course, to choose the people that will lead all this process, and to people that people will trust, the members will trust and believe in them. This is the case study that I want to just tell you. It's a short story about something we did. We have this agreement we signed on was signed on 91. That was also relevant for the producer of commercials for advertising on television, and there was one paragraph that said that from the third hour of overtime, the calculation of the price would be from the minimum price. What happened is that from 91 to 2010, there's a huge difference between the minimum price that didn't change to the actual price people use to work on every day. So it comes to a point that the third hour, the people got paid the same as the first hour of overtime. Mm-hmm. There's no difference. So we decided, we tried many years to change it by negotiating. And it didn't work, because every time we wanted to change this this issue, so the producer wanted to, you know, to open hundreds of other things. So what I decided to do is just, and this also go back to leaders and people that the other guys can trust, is just I gather some very strong people in this field of working on commercial, crew members. Mostly it was, I think there was no cinematographer there. It was just ACs and art department and all kind of assistants that usually used to struggle on set. So we have a meeting together and we discuss how we can do it and what we're going to do. And at the end of the day, we got the conclusion that no matter what, we're going to achieve it. However, whatever will need to be done, we'll do it. And what we decided is, from a certain day, that will be our working condition. I'm going to announce it. And that I will go to every producer. As I said, they don't have any guilds, so it's individuals. So I will have a meeting with each one of the main producers. It's not so many. It's about 10 of them or 12. And I will bring him this decision that we made, and we'll give him the chance to negotiate about it. And if he will refuse, so at that date, which we declared January 1st, 2010, from that date on, one-sided, that's our working condition in commercials, which means it's the same agreement, it's just to change this issue of overtime. And I don't know how it's here, but in Israel, commercials, they used to work many hours, like 18 hours, 20 hours, so it's crazy. So so that's what we did. I went to all the producers, said, and first we sent a letter, we prepared a letter, we sent it to, in 185 copies, to all the main big companies in Israel that advertise on television, all the PR offices, and all the producers. Just the same letter that announced that from this date that's how it's going to work. Then I met most of the producers. They all throw me from the window. I wasn't surprised, and I was quite happy that's what happened, because I preferred to negotiate with them, because I knew we're gonna succeed to and it was for our association was the right time to do some activity, to do something to show our power. So it was a great opportunity for us. So that what happened on January 1st. We declared that that's with our working conditions. And as I told you before, people are willing to be solidar to each other, but they also want you to ask them to do the minimum need. They don't want really to be involved in all these clashes with producers, because that's what they work for, you know, for their living. So what we did is just we prepared a deal memo. It's kind of one paper with the topics of the agreement, including this new paragraph said about overtime, with the table of the percentage of every hour. I think it's to our first hour it's 150%, and then it's go 300, and then 350. So it's come after 4.5 hours, it become a double day, something like that. That was the calculation we did. And we just emailed to all our members this document, and we said, well, the only thing we're asking you is not to go to work without this paper being signed. That's it. Don't have to do anything. You're self-employees. It's reasonable that you will have any kind of paper, an agreement between you and the producer before day of shoot, that you will know your condition, he will know. Don't have to argue with them. You don't have to do any troubles to the producer. Just send a fax or email this paper and get it back signed. Of course, the producer didn't agree to sign this paper. So what happened is that they, instead of dealing with producing production, they just have tons of papers in their offices just to deal with, to get a crew members. And no one will agree to work without this paper signed. Each one of our members said to the producer, well, I'm fine, I'm coming to work. I would be happy to work, but just I need this paper signed, that's it. And we keep the people all the time informed by text messages on a daily basis about any progress we have, because in this this days that it took about, I will tell you later, but it took about 2.5 weeks until something changed. But in these 2.5 weeks, there was already a producer that signed this paper, and people went out to work with the new conditions. So what happened after 2.5 weeks of this, it was a mess, but a good one. No, it's you know, from time to time, you have to even produce by yourself some problems, just to shake the boat a little bit, just people don't feel too safe. Mm-hmm. So it's something that we are now. I'm going to do it now in 2012. I'm going to change this agreement to 10 hours instead of 11 and a half. And to have weekend turnaround hours, because we don't have it now. So it's something that from every few years I'm doing something just to shake this boat a little bit. So anyway, it's just after 2.5 weeks, accidentally it's cut on the most big production company in Israel for commercials. They have to shoot commercial, a night shoot in supermarket, something like that, and they couldn't find crew members. So what happened, and believe me, they search, I got all the information all the time, they search in rental houses for people that work them, if they can come to work instead of our members, in universities, everywhere. It just wasn't possible to get crew members. So I got a phone call from the owner of the office, and he said, well, You have to stop it. Let's start negotiating. So here's come a huge dilemma for me, because we got already on the road with it, and people are implementing the small thing we asked for them, you know, and there's some producers that are already implementing it and working according to these conditions. So it was very a huge dilemma if to stop this, what we started, a one-sided move, or to go to or to continue with it. Well, I have some consulting with some members that have the influence on the other people, and the producer asked to have a 60-day in 60 days to get an agreement. That's a limited time. And he said, you have to help me. This was 11 o'clock a.m. His day of shoot was supposed to start at 7 p.m. So I understood immediately that I'm not under pressure. It's him. So that's the time for me to take the time. I keep him like that, and he keep texting me all the time, messages. I have to inform the customer if we're going to shoot today or not. You have to tell me where we're going. So I took him like that until 4 p.m. At 4 p.m. I called him and said, well, listen, we're willing to negotiate, but we have 3 to 4 preconditions. One, it's going to be 40 days, not 60. Just because 40 days was March 1st, so it was seems to me like a nice date. So it's 60s was 20 or something, 22, I don't know, just dated. It's easier to remember March 1st, that's the only reason. Second is that we're negotiating, but this particular condition is not negotiable. I mean, the minute he will start even to think about, talk about, I'm just leaving the room immediately. The third condition, that if we're not, we won't have agreement on March 1st, we are going back to square one, to this one-sided change we did when he agreed for that. And the fourth one was that the original crew members, that was the first one to refuse to go to work, they will go to work the same day to do the production, so people will not get hurt personally about losing work. So we negotiated for 40 days. We had agreement, which nothing changed in this agreement, except from this one condition that we wanted of overtime. And it was a huge successful move because, and this kind of things that show the solidarity between people. And although we have some members that tried to break it down, but then they got a lot of very not nice phone calls from other colleagues. Because that's what it's doing. You know, if someone is willing to take the job, everybody knows who is this person, and it's not the best situation in just a small industry that everybody knows everybody. Okay, so that's the story. This about just a little story about us. I can tell you other stories how we, for example, day before I arrived here, I got a call from producer that want to 2 days before she sent me she want to negotiate about production she's going to start, and she so I asked her, okay, so send me an agreement, I'll go over it and I'll send you remarks. So she said, well, there's just two things that relevant for ACT. So, well, okay, so send it just, and she sent me just two paragraphs from a whole agreement. So, well, listen, I'm not going to give you any remark about part of agreement because I have no idea what else you have there. So, send it all, because then let me decide if it's relevant or not. Otherwise, you know, go ahead and try to go out with your production. We'll see. I'll go my way. You go your way. We'll see when we meet. That's how, I mean, I cannot stop her. So she sent the full agreement. I give tons of remarks. It's just unbelievable. Going to polygraph checks and all kind of issues that they want because of to secure the information about the production. And So she didn't agree about all these remarks. So next thing happened, minute later, just all the relevant people got a text message that this production is not approved by the association and it's not working according to the condition. And it's happened again and again and again. And the producer just 5 minutes later on the line just I didn't answer her because she have to learn the lesson, so I didn't answer the phone. And she started text, it's not proper to send just a text message because of that, and it's a very small production. And so, well, I told you, you can start to go on your way and I'm my way, and we'll see when we will meet. So and I'm concentrate on this communication issue because it's really help us a lot to build the solidarity between the people, because people not feel alone. They know that all the rest of the people knows the same, have the same information. So it's really important. That's about ACT. Generally, I have really 100 stories and examples about things like that that we did. I can tell you generally that the most problematic field we had in the last few years, it's a reality shows. Producers are doing reality shows, which is a jungle. It's just unbelievable. And from 2 years ago, which producer that even if the crew member was mentioned the word union or association next to him, he was out of the job. Today we got to a point that the producer by himself is calling me to negotiate the agreement. So it's a process. It's a way that we did consistently on the same route that informed the people, and people really are happy with it. And the logic behind it is just that if you're a cinematographer, if you're a soundman, if you're whatever you're doing, just deal with this part of your job, your profession, and negotiate your salary with the producer, but all the rest just leave for the association to deal with. Just tell the producer, I'm not a lawyer, I have no idea about all this to negotiate working conditions. Just talk to the association. I know to make films. That's what I know to do. So it's worked very good. So I just before I go to this creator voice, this is the second topic, I want just to go back just what I meant, leaders or in how it's work. Always you have in a crew the people that are more active or less active, considering, you know, taking care of conditions and have some argument with the producer or really insist about the conditions. So what I'm trying to do is to pick up these people and to help them to, because they, when they're doing it personally, they of course have problems personally with getting work. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to do the work for them, but to use them to get solidarity from the other people on the set quietly, or that there will be the crew spokesman or whatever. This is just short remarks that I wanted to do about what is a leader. And today, I think, if I can speak about myself, is this the reason that I have that I succeed to do all these changes, is because when I used to be a crew member, I was one of these troublemakers, one of the biggest troublemakers, and I did some very extreme actions on set, like declare a rap on a set in the middle of a night shoot because the producer didn't want to pay overtime, and like to leave the set with the camera. Because the producer didn't want to pay night fee, this kind of thing, or to declare a strike on the set. We didn't come back to work from lunch because we didn't get the payment on time. So these kind of things that I did when I was younger, and you know,
didn't you get problems with this losing jobs?
I got some problems, but probably I was good enough, so I don't know. It's just, but it's very good that here there's a lot of DOPs here, because the support of DOPs is very important, because how it's the crew built by this chain, that the DOP chooses people, and if he's on the top, there's a person that support the people. It's easier for them to struggle and to get the backup from because what happened is that the DOPs, it's mostly happened when I worked as the first AC. So the DOPs that I used to work with them insist that I will work with them for the next project. So so it's really helped. Mm-hmm. I got to a point to a not very comfortable corners when the DOPs called me and said, well, listen, you have to relax a little bit. So I tried. Not always succeed, but I tried. because it's about, you know, justice. It's just not fair that I'm coming to production in the middle of the sea, that people are working for 2 months and they're working 15 hours every day, not getting paid for overtime. It's just impossible. So it's just, what happened is just one day that I decided it's the right moment before a big night scene that we just finished to prepare. I just turned off the camera and said, well, it's a wrap. And the producer got crazy, because it's the first AC or declare up on the set. It's something unheard of. It's not professional. It shouldn't happen. But what happened in this situation, it was that the light went off in seconds. Mm-hmm. Everybody just was the fastest rap ever crew did. And since that day, in this production, every day, the DOP and the director have a consult. If after 11 hours we have just one more scene, if we can make it in 1 hour or not. And we just started to go home earlier. So, and I don't know why, but the producer paid me everything at the end. So, but it's worked. So what I'm trying to do now is just to avoid this situation that personnel, you know, have to do these kind of activities, because it's dangerous. So I'm trying to do it for them. And to get them to support it, and that's it. So I moved to this, what I call creator voice. We even tried to do something like that. Imago tried to do something like that in Europe. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll manage to do it sometime, I don't know. It's not easy. But in Israel, in 2006, we established the Israeli Forum of Creators. This forum as include seven. I already wrote some questions that I guess that come out from this. So it's the forum is seven associations, which include producers, actors, directors, scriptwriters, editors, documentary creators, and ACT, which is it's basically the whole industry. We're meeting once a week, every Sunday morning, which is a business day in Israel. Just I realize that it's not obvious, but it's but in Israel, Sunday it's a regular business day. So every Sunday morning at 9:15, we have a meeting of about 3 hours. We are dealing with issues of that concern that they are in common for all industry, like all this issue of competition law and self-employees, because all of the members of all associations are self-employees, like issues of legislation, of the broadcasters, how much they have to produce, how many production, and which amount of money. We are on a weekly basis. Unfortunately, we are in the meetings in the parliament. We are already by now recognized by all the committees in the parliament and the broadcasters and all the different councils for the Film Institute and all these councils that dealing with the regulation as a forum. And we've been invited to all of this. If they have a hearing about something that they want to change, they will not do anything without invite us to hear us, what we have to say. And it's not obvious, this forum, because, of course, for example, ACT and producers have a lot of different interests on a daily basis. But we managed somehow to find the main issues that we have in common. So we the first thing we decided six years ago when we established this forum is that the things that we have different interests in is not on the table in this forum. The only thing we deal with is things we have, the big issues that we have in common, and we'll keep this forum and work together to achieve progress in these issues. Even if in the same time, sometimes when I sit next to the table and the chairman of the producer guild is sitting on the other side, and at the same time we are working together and going to the parliament together, we have a huge argument about something between ACT and the producer guild. So it's going simultaneously at the same time, and each association for me is, you know, interest, because producers know that they cannot change anything in the national issues without the support of ACT or the actors, or they cannot separate it, because if we will be against it, it will be very hard for them to change. So by now what we achieved is just was now just in the parliament a new law for licensing the license to broadcast on commercial television. So we were there in all the meetings, which took 2 years, all the meetings of the Economic Commission and the Parliament, and we have a direct communication with the Minister of Communication, with the Parliament members, with all the legal advisor of all the government offices that involve. And we also have, this forum, we have a lawyer that's working for us, and we have a lobby company that works for us in the parliament. So each one of the association gives some amount of money per month to sponsor it. Mm-hmm. And that's how we work. And we also just send to the parliament member if there's something we want that will be in this law, so we send it as it should be, as a lawyer writing it, and it's most of the thing we achieve, that people will listen to us and will accept it, because it's things that are reasonable. So that's how this creative voice is working. I think that it's a very, very important forum. Now, just today, we have emails. We're going probably next week to for the High Court in Israel, because the public television is not invest enough money according to according to the law. They have to invest 36% of their income on productions. So they're actually breaking the law. And so we are.
They have all income, including advertisement, including public fees and everything.
Yeah, 36%. And at least. And
I have a dream.
36%.
That's in the law, but they're breaking the law, at least in 2011. Before that, the minister that's responsible for public television were allowed to give them some discount of this percentage, but it's at the end of 2010. But they continue to
How much do they actually invest?
It's I think in 2010, 2.8%. Instead of 36.
Okay. No,
so it's so we have now a kind of exchanging letters with the these days the minister that's responsible for public television in Israel. It's the prime minister, which is like to be that have all the control of everything. This man personally, so we have kind of fixed. Yeah, it is. Never mind. would not say my opinion on him. Anyway, it's just it's not. We have exchange of letters between the Prime Minister office, this legal department, and us about this this issue. And I think that I don't know. We'll see on Sunday. We have a meeting. We'll decide. We're going to the High Court. That will help us to you know. It just doesn't make any sense that public television, that me personally and all the citizens of finance, it's not going. It's not coming back to the public. So,
But Sealink is very expensive. How do you finance all this? Only by membership fees?
We got that's something that is very very interesting. From one hand, all of these associations that are member here are illegal, according to competition law. On the other hand, we got finance from the government. So it's a kind of situation, because there's a film law supporting the film industry, that they give something like 70 million Israeli shekels per year, and it's there's a film council that decide how to share this amount of money. So most of it go, of course, to productions,
for
films. But 1.5% of this amount of money goes to the unions or associations that are in this field. So each one of the associations, 1.5% out of whatever. Now we are trying. The law is we try to increase the amount of money the we have for films to 100 million. We're working on it now. All these kind of things, we're working together, and it's much more powerful when the whole industry said, "Well, that's what should be." So decision makers must listen to it. It's not to just, you know, for example, producer with a very specific interest comes to ask for this, because then. But if everybody is asking for it, so it's much more powerful. So we finance by the country, by the government, and also few members. And it's very helpful financially to do all these activities, because we have 7 different associations. So each one of the associations give just a small amount—not small, but it's it's some amount of money—and we get enough money to sponsor it. And these special things we are doing, like suing in court, actually the government, the state. It's expensive and it's not in the regular budget, but it's worth it. It's worth it, because if we can bring the amount of money that this public television have to invest by law, it's about 300 million Israeli shekels per year.
Which is the 1 shekel to
€2? €5. It's about 60 million euros. They have to invest in productions. For independent producers, that
not the self-made things they do.
No.
Not their own program. And
they can do part of it their own program, but it's also said that at least 10% from this 36% must be drama or television series or documentary. Mm-hmm. At least 10% from this amount of money per year. Mm-hmm. So if we, by this amount of money, we'll invest in this sue in court to bring to our people back, you know, hundreds of millions. And now they are not investing what they need to invest for 3 years. So it can get to 1 billion Israeli shekels, which is you know, it's 200 million euros. Cool. So it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money for productions. Yeah. So it's worth it. It's worth to take the chance and to sue, because there's a lot of money and a lot of work for our people. So these things are just happening today with emails, and we got everybody have to ensure the letter that the lawyer wrote to the Prime Minister, which is the minister responsible for this public television. And we sent it, and on Sunday we'll decide if we're going to court. Mm-hmm. So that's one example of what we're doing just now. Okay, actions. 2009, we have a huge problem with broadcasters. They didn't invest the money they are have to invest in productions by law. So we went out to the street. This is another thing we did, all the creative creators together, which is much more powerful. So this is a few pictures from demonstration. This is what happened is this. One of the broadcasters have this clear glass studio outside on the beach that for music, the music channel that they're broadcasting. So we just climbed up on this roof and did some mess. There were police came and it was a big issue. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just like a commander unit. You don't say anything. You just come there with five people. No one's known before. It was very high secure secret, and just few people arrived there and started to climb on it. Lucky us, we have all this construction of this studio. Another thing we did, we broke into live broadcasting of the news on one of the channels. We broke into the studio. There was people were undercover as a pizza scooters, because otherwise you cannot get into this building. It's very secure because that they are broadcasting live news. So they came, like, somewhat asked for pizza, and they went in, and three people, and they just break into the in live, just to the with signs and everything. Oh yeah, yeah. And this is we broke into the council of that responsible for regulation of the broadcaster, the private broadcasters. So we see all this, all these activities. We have the special uniform for it that we will be marked, like with this yellow vest. That everybody in Israel have in his car, because it's by the law you have to carry it with you. So it's very convenient to that will be our uniform. So we broke into this meeting. We shouted a little bit. For example, the person you see in the middle with the black, he's now the chairman of the producer association. So when you can see people from scriptwriters and from our association and just everybody. Just everybody. Of course, most of the people were active in these demonstrations were from ACT, the simple workers that really get adrenaline from fighting. Another thing, so we don't have a picture here, but some of our people just broke into a studio where a very popular show were shot in a studio, and outside was like 600 people demonstrating, and it was big mess with police, and people were arrested, and it wasn't any. The main issue here is just to make noise, get it on the media, to get it on the internet, to get publicity, and then people start to when it's the whole industry, they cannot ignore from you anymore. I mean, they have to deal with you somehow, because it's just the problem getting too big.
So what is the public opinion towards your issues? Does the general public sympathize with those
Most of it, yes. Of course, we consider the filmmakers as leftish political people, weirdos that are, you know, doing all this. But it's actually what is the public here is important, but is doesn't really have any influence about the results or what we can achieve. I mean, the main issue is that our concern will be people will hear it, right people. And generally what we learned that these guys, broadcasters, at the end of the day, the owner have, you know, other businesses, and they don't like this noise. It's just not helpful business. This noise, that you know, and sometimes they realize that with, for them, a small amount of money, they can get some you know some quiet in the area, so they prefer to do it. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of how strong you are. Mm-hmm. If the amount of people that are struggling is big enough. Just want to show you, and it's all in Hebrew. So, but a short video of these demonstrations. Part of them, you will see also the studio. There's no sound. The sound will be from here. It's just under the one of the apartment of one of the owner of the one of the stations. Uh-huh. We put all signs next to his house. This is the building, the offices of the broadcaster. Yes. We had a big conference with all the people. This next to Coca-Cola, with one of the owners, is his own Coca-Cola, so we're there.
And it takes one night and one day, or?
It took about a few weeks. This is the studio that people broke into it, with this television show. This is the chairman of the directors. Said that this guy, the owner, is sleeping, so we want him to wake up. It was the middle of the night. It was 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And we did, you know, when it's not comfortable. This is the chairman of the scriptwriters guild. And we have this whistle where you make noise. It's very noisy. And 300 people doing it. People get arrested. This one is a Greek. This is the amount... this is a strike. We have 3 days of strike, so...
Great.
Okay. Stop it. We saw the logos of all the associations were there at the end. So, it's just an example of wait a minute. Just an example for things that we did, because when people get desperate enough, they're willing to do to go out to the street and to demonstrate. And this was a very crucial time that since then no one will take any decision without hearing our opinion about it. It's really, that's the main dramatic thing that it changed, and also the broadcaster started to invest the money they have to buy law. It's basically caused the regulation council to start to follow to do their work, actually, what they're supposed to do. That's about it generally. I just have here it's a lot about inspiration from my point of view, inspiration that you can bring to the people, and it's a way of thinking and to think positive. Nothing is impossible, and so there's a 15 minutes video here from a website called TED, which has nothing to do with film industry, but I thought it's interesting because it gives some inspiration about it. That if people want something, it's possible. And do you want to see it? It's,
yeah, of course. Yeah, sure.
It's, it has nothing to do with film. The sound will be low because it's from the computers. But you know, and I'll put a German subtitle. So. I just wait a minute. Wait a minute. Yeah.
wanted to race cars. And I wanted to be a cowgirl. And I wanted to be Mowgli from the Jungle Book. Because they were all about being free. Wind in your hair, just to be free. And on my 17th birthday, my parents, knowing how much I love speed, gave me one driving lesson for my 17th birthday. Not that we could have afforded I drive, but to give me the dream of driving. And on my 17th birthday, I accompanied my little sister in complete innocence, as I always had all my life, my visually impaired sister, to go to see an eye specialist, because big sisters are always supposed to support their little sister. And my little sister wants to be a pilot, God help her. So I used to get my eyes tested just for fun. And on my 17th birthday, after my fake eye exam, the eye specialist just noticed it happened to be my birthday. And he said, so what are you going to do to celebrate? And I took that driving lesson and I said, I'm going to learn how to drive. And then there was a silence. One of those awful silences when you know something's wrong. And he turned to my mother and he said, you haven't told her yet. On my 17th birthday, as Janice Ian would have said, I learned the truth at 17. I am, and have been since birth, legally blind. And you know, how on earth did I get to 17 and not know that? Well, if anybody says country music isn't powerful, let me tell you this. I got there because my father's passion for Johnny Cash and a song, A Boy Named Sue. I'm the eldest of three. I was born in 1971. And very shortly after my birth, my parents found out I had a condition called ocular albinism. And what the hell does that mean to you? So let me just tell you the great part of all of this. I can't see this clock and I can't see the timing. So, holy God, woohoo! I might buy some more time. But more importantly, let me tell you, I'm going to just come up really close here. Don't freak out, Pat. Hey, see this hand? Beyond this hand is a world of Vaseline. Every man in this room, even you, Steve, is George Clooney. And every woman, you are so beautiful. And when I want to look beautiful, I step 3 feet away from the mirror and I don't have to see these lines etched in my face from all the squinting I've done all my life, from all the dark lights. The really strange part is that at 3 and a half, just before I was going to school, my parents made a bizarre, unusual, and incredibly brave decision. No special needs schools. No labels. No limitations. My ability and my potential. And they decided to tell me that I could see. So just like Johnny Cash's Sue, a boy given a girl's name, I would grow up and learn from experience how to be tough and how to survive when they were no longer there to protect me or just take it all away. But more significantly, they gave me the ability to believe, totally to believe, that I could. And so when I heard that eye specialist tell me all the things, a big fat no, everybody imagines I was devastated. And don't get me wrong, because when I first heard it, aside from the fact that I thought it was insane, I got that thump in my chest. You know that, huh? But very quickly I recovered. It was like that. The first thing I could thought about was my mom, who was crying over beside me. And I swear to God, I walked out of his office. I will drive. I will drive. You're mad. I'll drive. I know I can drive. And with the same dogged determination that my father had bred into me since I was such a child, he taught me how to sail, knowing I could never see where I was going. I could never see the shore. And I couldn't see the sail. And I couldn't see the destination. But he told me to believe and feel the wind in my face. And that wind in my face made me believe that he was mad and I would drive. And for the next 7 years, I swore nobody would ever find out that I couldn't see because I didn't want to be a failure and I didn't want to be weak. And I believed I could do it. So I rammed through life as only a Casey can do. And I was an archaeologist, and then I broke things. And then I managed a restaurant, and then I flipped some things. And then I was a masseuse, and then I was a landscape gardener. And then I went to business school, and, you know, disabled people are hugely educated. And then I went in, and I got a global consulting job at Accenture, and they didn't even know. It's extraordinary how far belief can take you. In 1999, 2.5 years into that job, something happened. Wonderfully, my eyes decided, enough. And temporarily, and very unexpectedly, they dropped. And I'm in one of the most competitive environments in the world where you work hard, play hard, you gotta be the best, you gotta be the best. And 2 years in, I really could see very little. And I found myself in front of a HR manager in 1999, saying something I never imagined that I would say. I was 28 years old. I had built a persona all around what I could and couldn't do. And I simply said, I'm sorry. I can't see. And I need help. Asking for help can be incredibly difficult. And you all know what it is. You don't need to have a disability to know that. We all know how hard it is to admit weakness and failure, and it's frightening, isn't it? But all that belief had fueled me so long, and can I tell you, operating in a sighted world when you can't see, it's kind of difficult. It really is. Can I tell you, airports are a disaster. Oh, for the love of God. Oh, and please, any designers out there, okay, designers, please put up your hands even though I can't even see you. You know, I always end up in the gents' toilets. You know, and there's nothing wrong with my sense of smell. But can I just tell you, the little sign for a gent's toilet or a lady's toilet is determined by a triangle. Have you ever tried to see that if you have, Vaseline in front of your eyes? It's such a small thing, right? And you know how exhausting it can be to try to be perfect when you're not, or to be somebody that you aren't? And so after admitting I couldn't see Pedro, they sent me off to an eye specialist. And I had no idea that this man was going to change my life. But before I got to him, I was so lost. No idea who I was anymore. And that eye specialist, he didn't bother testing my eyes. God, no. It was therapy. And he asked me several questions, of which many were, why? Why are you fighting so hard not to be yourself? And do you love what you do, Caroline? And you know when you go to a global consulting firm, they put a chip in your head and you're like, I love Accenture, I love Accenture, I love my job, I love Accenture, I love Accenture, I love Accenture, I love my job, I love Accenture. To leave would be a failure. And he said, do you love it? I couldn't even speak. I was so choked up. I just was so, how do I tell him? And then he said to me, what do you want to be when you were little? Now, listen, I wasn't going to say to him, well, I wanted to race cars and motorbikes. Hardly appropriate at this moment in time. He thought I was mad enough anyway. And as I left his office, called me back and he said, I think it's time to stop fighting and do something different. And that door closed, and the silence just outside a doctor's office that many of us know, and my chest ached, and I had no idea where I was going. I had no idea, but I did know the game was up. And I went home, and because the pain in my chest ached so much, I thought, oh God, well, I'll go out for a run. Really not a very sensible thing to do. You know, and I went on a run that I know so well. You know, I know this run so well by the back of my hand. I always run it perfectly fine. I count the steps and the lampposts and all those things that visually impaired people have a tendency to have a lot of meetings with. And there was a rock that I've always missed, and I've never fallen on it, never. And there I was, crying away, and smash, bash on my rock. Broken, fallen, over on this rock in the middle of March in 2000, in typical Irish weather, on a Wednesday. Grey, not tears everywhere, ridiculously self-pitying. And I was floored, and I was broken, and I was angry. And I didn't know what to do. And I sat there for quite some time going, how am I going to get off this rock and go home? Because who am I going to be? What am I going to be? And I thought about my dad, and I thought, good God, I'm so not Sue now. And I kept thinking over my mind, what had happened? Where did it go wrong? Why didn't I understand? And you know, the extraordinary part of it is, I just simply had no answers. I had lost my belief. Look where my belief had brought me to. And now I had lost it, and now I really couldn't see. I was crumpled. And then I remember thinking about that eye specialist asking, what do you want to be? Do you like? What do you want to be? What do you want to be when you're little? Do you love what you do? Do something different. what you want to be. Do something different. What do you want to be? And really slowly, 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 it happened. And it did happen this way. And then the minute it came, it blew up in my head and bashed in my heart. Something different. Well, how about Mowgli from the Jungle Book? You don't get more different than that. And the moment, and I mean the moment that hit me, I swear to God, it was like, woohoo, you know? Something to believe in, and nobody can tell me no. Yes, he can say I can't be an archaeologist, but you can't tell me no, I can't be Mowgli, because guess what? Nobody ever's done it before, so I'm going to go do it. And it doesn't matter whether I'm a boy or a girl, I'm just going to scoot. And so I got off that rock, and oh my God, did I run home. And I sprinted home, and I didn't fall, and I didn't crash, and I ran up the stairs, and there's one of my favorite books of all time, Travels on My Elephant by Mark Shand, I don't know if any of you know it. And I grabbed this book off, and I'm sitting on the couch, and I'm going, I know what I'm going to do. I know how to be Mowgli. I'm going to go across India on the back of an elephant. I'm going to be an elephant handler. And I had no idea how I was going to be an elephant handler. From global management consultant to elephant handler. I had no idea how. I had no idea how you hire an elephant, get an elephant. I didn't speak Hindi. I've never been to India. I hadn't a clue. But I knew I would. Because when you make a decision at the right time in the right place, God, that universe makes it happen for you. 9 months later, after that day in Snot Rock, I had the only blind date in my life with a 7.5-foot elephant called Kanchi. And together we would trek 1,000 kilometers across India. The most powerful thing of all is it's not that I didn't achieve before then. Oh my God, I did. But you know what? I was believing in the wrong thing, because I wasn't believing in me. Really me. All the bits of me. All the bits of all of us. Do you know how much of us all pretend to be somebody we're not? And you know what? When you really believe in yourself and everything about you, it's extraordinary what happens. And you know what? That trip, that 1,000 kilometers, it raised enough money for 6,000 cataract eye operations. 6,000 people got to see because of that. When it came home off that elephant, do you know the most amazing part was? I jacked in my job in Accenture. I left and I became a social entrepreneur, and I set up an organization with Mark Shand called Elephant Family, which deals with Asian elephant conservation. And I set up Kanchi because my organization was always going to be named after my elephant, because disability is like the elephant in the room. And I wanted to make you see it in a positive way. No charity, no pity, but I wanted to work only and truly with business and media leadership to totally reframe disability in a way that was exciting and possible. It was extraordinary, you know? That's what I wanted to do. And I never thought about nose anymore, or not seeing or any of that kind of mad thing. It just seemed that it was possible. And you know, the oddest part is when I was on my way traveling here to TED, I'll be honest, I was petrified. And I speak, but this is an amazing audience. And what am I doing here? You know, as I was traveling here, you'll be very happy to know I did use my white symbol stick cane, because it's really good to skip queues in the airport. And I got my way here being happily proud that I couldn't see. And the one thing is that a really good friend of mine, he texted me on the way over knowing that I was scared. Even though I present confident, I was scared. He said, be you. And so here I am. This is me. All of me. I have learned that, you know what, cars and motorbikes and elephants, that's not freedom. Being absolutely truly yourself is freedom. And I never needed eyes to see. Never. I simply needed vision and belief. And if you truly believe, and I mean believe from the bottom of your heart, you can make change happen. And we need to make it happen. Because every single one of us, woman, man, gay, straight, disabled, perfect, normal, whatever, every one of us must be the very best of ourselves. I no longer want anybody to be invisible. We all have to be included, and stop with the labels, the limiting of labels, because we are not jam jars. We are extraordinarily different, wonderful people. Thank you.
Thank you. So
This is it. This is it. So it just, it's nothing to do with film industry, as you see. But it's for me, it's give a lot of inspiration. And I used to, it's another thing that I use from time to time to show our people. Just kind of things that just open their head and to see there's some other difficulties. And it's that's why I'm writing. And it's really my motto, it's just nothing is impossible. It's just if you choose the right way to do it and you really insist on it, so I think that it's possible. It's also another kind of these sentences that Margaret Mead, if you know, which was very well known anthropologist, one of the which is very relevant for what we're doing here from my point of view. That's just all my presentation. Now it's time for you, if you have any questions or anything you want to start discuss, I don't know, practically how you can do it, what you want to do. That's it.